Masechet Baba Kama Daf Peh. We just saw a Baraita which mentioned the prohibition of raising small animals, sheep and goats, in the land of Israel. However, one is allowed to import some live sheep 30 days before a holiday or before a wedding, and a butcher can keep some sheep around for 30 days so that then he will be able to slaughter it and sell the meat. So we follow up on that halakha. Sha'alu tamidav et Rabban Gamliel. Mahu legadel? Amar lehen mutar. So the students of Rabban Gamliel asked him, what do you think? Are you allowed to raise small domesticated animals in the land of Israel? And he says, yes, it's permitted. We ask, v'hatenan en megadelin. Hold on, we have a braita that says one is not allowed to. Now, this is not really a question because Rabban Gamliel is earlier than he is a Tana himself. It's probably earlier than the authorship of this Baraita. The question might, in fact, be the other way, right? How could this Baraita say en megadelin if Rabban Gamliel says it's permitted? Anyway, there is a contradiction. So we say ela hachi ka ba'umine mahu le lashhot. No, the question was not, are you allowed to raise small animals? That, for sure, everyone agrees is not allowed. I guess the idea is that the Baraita is giving you the standard law that everybody has agreed to. So the question was not, can you raise, for sure you can't raise them, but can you keep them in the land of Israel for a while? Because eventually you want to eat them, and so you want to keep them there for some time. Amar lehem mutar, b'lvad shelo teseh v'tir'eh ba'edet, ela koshra b'chareh hamitah. It says, yes, it's permitted as long as you don't allow it to go out and graze among the flock, but rather you have to tie it to the legs of your bed and your house. I don't think it means literally has to be tied to the bed, but it has to be, you have to keep it inside and not let it go graze, because the main reason why it's not allowed is because the sheep and goats tend to graze and they go into other people's property and steal. But if you keep it inside, then it is permitted. He seems to be more lenient than the halakha we saw before, that one can only do so for 30 days before a holiday or before a wedding. He says, no, you can probably keep it anytime, as long as you keep it tied up. Then it's okay. Teno Rabbanan, Maase Behasid Echad Shaya Goneyach Melibo, V'shalu Rofim Bamru, En Lo Takana Ad Sheyinak Chalav Rotech Meshacharit LeShacharit. So there was some pious man who was groaning, suffering something in his heart, or maybe some kind of skin disease. Speculation maybe it was tuberculosis. And in fact, in ancient times, drinking milk was good for diseases of the lung. And so the doctors told him that the only remedy is to drink warm milk, meaning fresh milk, directly from an animal every morning. And so, because he had to have this every morning, and he lives in the land of Israel, so they brought a goat and tied it to the leg of his bed, and he could get nice, fresh, warm milk every morning. So his friends came to visit him because he was sick. That's very nice of them. But then they saw this goat tied to the end tied to the leg of his bed, and they turned away and they said, "There's an armed robber in his house." Well, it was a goat, but a goat is like an armed robber in that it tends to go around and graze in other people's fields and steal. And it's uncontrollable. It's like an armed robber. And we're going to go in. This guy's not so pious after all, if he would be so careless as to keep a goat in his house. It's not allowed. Yashvu badku v'loma subo ela oto avon shel ota ha'ez. They went and checked all his deeds. Some nice friends. I'm going to make sure he's worthy of their friendship. And they found that, in fact, he had no other sin except this one, that he kept a goat in his house for good medical reasons. And he also, in his deathbed, admitted that this was one sin that he made. He knows he has no other sin except this, that he went against the opinion of his colleagues, the sages. So see here, although according to Rabban Gamliel, it seems that this would have been permitted, but the colleagues here, and at the end of the story, this Hasid himself recognized that But Rabban Gamliel is the minority opinion, but the majority opinion would not allow it. They would allow 30 days before a holiday and so on, but not to keep it inside. Not to keep it at more than that, and not during time of a holiday, and not more than 30 days, even if it's tied to one's bed, it's not allowed. Okay, Shanim discussed. Well, this was a medical necessity. So if it's pikuach nefesh, his life is in danger, so sure, certainly should be allowed. So it could be maybe his life was not in danger, maybe he was just uncomfortable, or maybe he could have left Israel and gone and lived on a farm outside so that he would not have to violate this law. Anyway, this is a story that demonstrates that the rabbis took this seriously. Amar Rabbi Ishmael, Mibaale Batim Shebagalil Ha'yon Hayu, Bet Abba, Mepene Ma Harbu, Sheyamarin Be Hod Hashin, Vedanin Dinem Amonot Be Yachid. Rabbi Ishmael says that his family members, he had family members who were householders, meaning they owned homes, they were rich people among the people in Galilee. So that's his father's household. They were very rich. But everything they had was destroyed. Why? What was their sin that they got punished in losing all their wealth? Two things. They would allow their flocks to graze in the forest. Now, we saw in the Braita above that this is permitted. Even in the land of Israel, they just can't graze in the settled area, but they can graze in the middle of the forest. But anyway, that's one. And second, that they would judge cases alone, without three people or five or 23, the requisite number of judges you have to have. They said, oh, I know everything. I know enough. I can judge alone. And Masechet Sanhedrin says, there's only one judge who can judge alone, and that is Yechido Shel Olam. Kadosh Baruch Hu can see all the sides and be fair and all that, but a human being cannot judge alone. Now we see the problem with going in the forest. If they were just went directly into the forest to graze, that would be okay. And even though they had these forests that was close to their house, nevertheless, there was a small private field in the middle, and they would have to go through from their own houses where they had these sheep. They would have to go through the small private area until they got to the forest. And so as they were going through that, inevitably, the sheep would graze on that private person's land. And for that sin, they lost all of their wealth. Tenor banan roe asa shasa teshuba en mechayvin oto limkor miyad ela mocher al yad al yad. A shepherd who wants to make teshubah, right? Who said you're not allowed to be a shepherd in Israel? So now he was, and he wants to make teshubah. So we don't require him. He can come to the Beit Din. I want to make teshubah. We're not going to require him to sell all of his flock right away, because then he'll be bankrupt. He won't be able to survive at all. Rather, we tell him, right, ever sell it gradually. That way, you gradually slow down your business, and then in the meantime you can go invest in something else, because we want to make it easier to encourage people to make teshubah. And similarly, a convert who inherits dogs or pigs in his inheritance, I guess it's talking about a convert, because if his biological father had these non-kosher animals, that would is more likely if he was a non-Jew, but anyone really, and some versions don't have get. So anyone who inherits it, he got the stuff. So now one's not allowed to raise non-kosher animals. We saw already before. So we don't require the person to sell everything immediately, but rather sell it gradually. That makes it easier financially to divest of this thing that you're not allowed to own, but that's fine. He doesn't have to do it in one day. וכן מי שנדל לקח בית ולקח אישה בארץ ישראל, אין מחייבין אותו לקח מיד עד שימצא את ההוגנת לו. Similarly, someone who makes a vow that he says, I'm going to buy a house and marry a woman in Eretz Yisrael. That's it. I'm making aliyah, I'm setting up a shop in Eretz Yisrael. We don't require him to do it immediately. He has to find a proper house, a proper wife. And you can't just say, well, you made a vow, that's it. You have to do it tomorrow. So now he has to just marry the first person he meets, or buy whatever house is available. No, you want to make sure that he's happy that it will be a good deal for him. Ma'aseh be'isha achat shehiya benah meser la v'kafsa v'nishbeha kol mi sheyavo eni mahaziratu. A similar case of a single woman, a single mom. She was divorced or widowed, and she had a son, and the son was misbehaving and caused distressing her, and she didn't know what to do. And so she said, I know, this boy needs a father to discipline him. So she jumped up and impulsively made a vow and says, anyone who will who comes and marries me, I will not turn him away, right? I'll marry anybody who comes and is willing, and that way this boy will have a father figure in his house. And so, v'kafsu aleh b'nei adam she'enan mehuganin. And so people heard that offer, and all kinds of low-life guys that were not a fit for her jumped at the opportunity to marry this woman. So the matter came to Chachamim, and I said, oh, look, she vowed, whoever comes first. So yeah, I jumped up first. I'm willing to marry her. And the rabbi said, no, she didn't. Your intention was only for a man who is appropriate for her, a good guy that she will like, that will get along with her, that will be a good husband. And so you guys are not fitting. And so therefore you're out. So again, even though both these cases, someone took a vow, but it doesn't mean that you have to fulfill it immediately in the wrong way. What the person means is when the right opportunity, the right person comes along, then I will fulfill the vow and marry. Just like you can't raise a small domesticated animal like sheep and goats, one is also not allowed to raise a wild small animals like a fox that in the land of Israel. Rabbi Ishmael Omer Megadilin Kelabim Kufrin Vachatulim Vekofin Vechuldot Senaim Ipnesh Asuim Lenaked Et Habayit. However, Rabbi Ishmael says that one is permitted to raise village dogs, cats, monkeys, genets. What is that? Here is one, nice and cute. You see it has very short legs. We're going to talk about that in a second. You can get one as a pet because these help to clean the house. They go and find the mice and other creepy crawlies and eat them. So these are actually quite helpful. My chuldot senaim, what are these things that we mentioned as genets? Amar Rav Yehuda sharsa harsa. Hikadamere harza. So in Aramaic, they're known as sharsa harsa or just harza. Why are they called that? Diktine shake v'ra'ye bene vardine. Because they have short thighs and graze among the thorn bushes. And why is it called sharsa, like a sheretz, like a creepy crawly? Because its thighs are short, so it looks like it slithers, even though actually it does have legs. Amar Rav Yehuda amar Rav. Asinu asminu bebabel keretz Yisrael libhema daka. Amar le Rav ada bar ahava le Rav huna didach mai. So Rav Yehuda says the name of his teacher Rav, the first generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael. He moved, he studied under Rabbi Yehuda Nasi in Eretz Yisrael, and then he went and founded the yeshiva in Surah in Bavel. So he says that we have made ourselves in Bavel like those in Eretz Yisrael for the law of small animals. In other words, we decided to be stringent and not raise sheep and goats in Bavel either. However, Rav Adab Rava told Rav Huna. Rav Huna was also a student of Rav, who lived there in Bavel. He says, what about you? You have sheep and goats. How are you allowed to raise them? When your own teacher, Rav, says that we should be stringent in Bavel like in Eretz Yisrael. Amar le didan kam mintera lehu hoba. Rav Huna answered, my wife, hoba, she watches the animals, she takes care of them, and she makes sure that they don't graze on anybody else's land. As that way, there's no problem. Amar le hoba tikberin hu libna. And so Rav Ada bar Ahava did not like that answer. This is a loophole. No, it's not allowed at all. And he made this very serious curse. Me hoba bury her son because she thinks that she can go against this law that Rav said and say, oh, I'll watch them. No, this is very serious and you should not have done that. And therefore, he says this terrible thing. And sure enough, his curse came true. And all the days that Rav Adab Bar Ahava was around, the Rav Huna did not have any surviving children because of the curse. That's one version of the statement. The first version was Rav Yehuda said in the name of his teacher. Here, Rav Huna is the one that said in the name of his teacher, Asinu Asmenu Bebabel Keretz Yisrael Libhema Daka. Same exact words so far that we decided in Bavel that we are going to be machmir regarding these sheep and goats and not raise them. Mechi ata Rav leBavel, since the time that Rav came to Bavel, these last four words couldn't be possibly be in the name of Rav, because Rav wouldn't say when Rav came to Bavel, he decided, right, that, so this must be Rav Huna adding to the statement, right? Rav said, we decided that we're going to be machmir and not raise such animals in Bavel, and so since the time he came to Bavel, we stopped doing it. This according to this version, it ends there, and maybe this point here is that Rav Huna did used to have sheep and goats, but then once Rav came, so then he stopped. Rav Shmuel and Rav Asi ikle'u lebe Shavua haben v'amri la lebe Yeshua haben. So a fascinating story about Rav together with his colleagues Shmuel and Rav Asi. They went to a Brit Milah. It was called Shavua ben, a week from the birth of a son. So that's, you know, well, 8 days, and then that's a Brit Milah. So they were going to such a celebration, and some say Yeshua haben. Ben, this sounds like the founder of another religion. It's not. Yeshua, I mean pigeon. They went to the house of a pigeon haben. Either way, a brit milah or a pigeon haben. And they're entering into the party. All three of them happen to arrive at the same time. And each one wants to give kavod to the other. Says, you go first. No, you go first. And none of them would enter before the other. So Rav would not enter before Shmuel. He says, so Shmuel, you have to go first. Here's the thing. Shmuel would not enter. Shmuel la ayel kamed Rav Aseh. Before Rav Aseh, Rav Aseh, you go first. Rav Aseh lo ayel kamed Rav. But Rav Aseh would not enter before Rav came. So now all three is going around in a circle and nobody was walking in. So this is taking a while. Amri man nitrach. So here's what we're going to have to do. We're going to have someone will have to wait outside for longer. In other words, go one person will walk around the block as if he arrived at a different time altogether. That way, that person will be not honored, not dishonored from entering first. So you enter into the party first, and then someone right behind you. So then the first person is honored. The second person is a little bit less honored. But if you come 5 minutes later, then you're totally out of the picture. So it's okay. One of us, we have to break this round robin here. So one of us has to wait a few minutes outside. So they decided, Nirtach Shmuel v'neteh Rav v'Rav Aseh. So Shmuel should wait outside, and then Rav and Rav Aseh will enter. Okay, now we ask, V'nirtach Rav or Rav Aseh, why do we say that Shmuel should be the one that has to wait? Why not make Rav or Rav Aseh wait behind and let Shmuel go in? Rav milita ba'amahu davad le'li Shmuel b'shum dahu ma'aseh de latyeh ad bereh Rav ale. So no, Rav is really greater than Shmuel in stature. And Rav was only giving honor as a nice gesture to Shmuel, even though Shmuel was lower, because he felt guilty about a certain occurrence in which Rav cursed Shmuel by mistake. And so Rav wanted to make up for it, and therefore he showed Shmuel deference. It doesn't mention the story here, but the story is mentioned in Masechet Shabbat, that Shmuel was a doctor. And Rav, he had some kind of eye disease, and Shmuel prepared an ointment for Rav. Rav didn't know who made the ointment and who applied it, and it stung. So Rav cursed, said, curse be to whoever put this ointment on me, not knowing that it was in fact Shmuel, and it was for his own good. But nevertheless, even though it was a mistake, so still he made this curse. So maybe this whole story is here because we just had a story about a curse as well. And so therefore, after that, Rav felt bad that he said that negative thing about Shmuel. So we wanted to always give Shmuel honor. So that's why Rav, in the first place, told Shmuel to go first. But then when they got into this thing that no one would go in first, so Shmuel was in fact the lower of them, and he waited outside. As they're all this going on, it's taking a while for them to figure out how to get into the room. A cat unfortunately came and bit the hand of a baby. Nefak rav v'darash, hatul mutal lehorgo v'asur lekayemo v'en bo mishum gezel v'en bo mishum hashev aveda la be'alim. So because this cat strangely just came and maybe some kind of wild cat bit off the hand of the baby, Rav was so upset by this and he said, that's it. If you see as kind of a cat, then you're allowed to kill it and you're not allowed to keep it. These are dangerous. And if you want to steal it, you're permitted. There's no law of stealing it. And if you find it, you do not have to return it to its master. Let's get rid of these dangerous cats. Question on Rav. Rav seemed to have been in a tirade against them and he's ranting all the things you can't do, but we're still going to analyze it legally. If he said that you're allowed to kill them, then why does he have to say further that you're not allowed to keep them? Of course, if you can kill them, then you're not going to keep them. So I might have thought that you're allowed to kill them, but you don't have to kill them. And so if you want, you can kill them. If you want, you can keep them. And he says, no, you're not allowed to sustain them and keep them here. That you have to get rid of them or kill them. Mri vechevan damat en bo mishum gezel mayni hutu en bo mishum hashev aveda la be'alim amar vina le'oro. And further question on Rav's statement, if he says that you're allowed to steal them, then why do you have to say that you don't have to return them? Obviously, if you can go and steal it, take it from someone, then you don't have to return it. And Avina says, we're talking about the hide. If you see a dead one is not dangerous, and you want to take its hide, can you take it for yourself or return it? You don't have to return it to its owner. You can just keep it for yourself. Meti be Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Megadilin kelabin kufrin vechatulin vekofin vechludot senaim ipnei she'asuyin lenaked et habayit. A challenge to this, right? You said that you can't, that Rav said that you have to kill these cats. However, we just saw that in the Baraita that Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says that you're allowed to raise dogs, cats, monkeys, and genets because they serve to clean the house. So why do you say this? Cats are included here. Why do you say you can kill them? But here it says you can keep them. No, the Braita is talking about black cats. That's okay. You can keep black cats around. They are safe and they get rid of the mice. But white cats, those are the ones that can bite and are dangerous, and you have to destroy them. Hold on, that story about Rav that bit off the baby's hand, that was indeed a black cat. So how could it be that so you see black cats are also dangerous? How can you say that you can keep a black one? It's true, it was black, but its mother was white. Or father, I don't know. It was the offspring of a white cat. So even though it was only half. So just because it had a white parent, that makes it dangerous. And even though it itself is black, it's dangerous. Hold on, you're assuming that if it's black, the son of a white cat, then that is going to be dangerous because it has some whiteness. This was a question that Ravina had, and Ravina didn't know the answer, so it shouldn't be so obvious. After all, Ravina asked a black cat that's the offspring of a white one. He asked about it, what is it? But according to this, we should know that it's dangerous. And I said, no, that was actually a different question. Ravina's question was, if it's a black cat that is the son of a white one, that's the son of a black one. So it has in its descent, in its parents, one black, one white, so then it's kind of mixed, and that was the question. But the case of Rav is when it's black, but it's the offspring of white, So it's all white in its parentage. So then it has really a lot of bad. White is bad, is dangerous, and so that's the case of Rav. So that's why the one in the Rav story that bit off the baby's hand, for sure, this is a bad one that has to be killed. So any white one has to be killed, and even if it's a black one, but it has all white ancestors, that's not going to be good. The question is, as if it's white and has mixed ancestors, perhaps that's okay. But if it's a pure black cat, then you know that that's safe. The Mishnah had mentioned a law that one cannot raise small animals in the land of Israel, that in order to help settle the land of Israel properly. So now we have another law that will relate to buying land in Israel. Amar Rabbi Aha bar Papa Mishum Rabbi Abba bar Papa Mishum Rabbi Ada bar Papa. Okay, we're going to have a lot of names here, and we have a special mnemonic to remember the order of the names. So anyway, there's one version that says, Rav Acha bar Papa, that said the name of Rabbi Abba, the son of Papa, who said the name of Rabbi Ada bar Papa. The second version says, Vamri La, Vamri Amar La Rabbi Abba bar Papa, Mishum Rabbi Chia bar Papa, Mishum Rabbi Abba bar Papa. A third version says, Amri La Rabbi Abba bar Papa, Mishum Rabbi Acha bar Papa, Mishum Rabbi Chanina bar Papa. Okay, anyway, it was certainly from the Papa family that the following statement was said. Matrein ala haikuch b'shabbat, v'delet dan hanin aylet lo bimhera tipatach, v'alokech bayit b'etz Yisrael, kotvin alav ono afilu b'shabbat. Number one, if you see a breakout of sores, skin sores, then one should sound the alarm. In other words, gather in prayer and even blow shofar. This is a very serious thing because it could be contagious. And I don't know if the best thing is to bring everyone together, but anyway, outdoors or separated, everyone should come and pray and blow shofar and make a big deal, even on Shabbat, even though one does not generally make requests on Shabbat, but you have to sound the alarm and make sure to take care of this immediately. And furthermore, a door that is locked won't be open quickly. We'll see what this cryptic statement is talking about. And the third law, which relates to the Yishuv of Eretz Yisrael, is someone who buys a house in Eretz Yisrael, one can go and write a bill of sale even on Shabbat. Let's say a Jew is buying a piece of land in Israel from a non-Jew, and it happens to be Shabbat. You don't want to let the deal go. You don't want it to be reversed and him to change his mind. The law of settling the land of Israel overrides even writing a contract on Shabbat. Me'etive ushar pur aniyot mitrageshot bot ubaot al hasibur kegon chikuch chagav zevuv sir'a v'yatush. We have a contradiction here from a Beraita that says when you're talking about drought, then you come together in public prayer and you do everything, even on Shabbat, and you blow shofar and everything. But for other calamities that happen, that come on the public, you don't. For example, if there are sores, and that's ours, we're talking about sores, and other items like locusts, flies, hornets, mosquitoes, infestation of snakes and scorpions, for all these things, the court would not demand that that would not sound the alarm, would not blow shofar, but rather they would cry out, right? A little bit more subdued because it is Shabbat. So these things are not quite as, they're bad, but they're not quite as bad as a drought. So you just said here, the halakha is that you do sound the alarm on Shabbat for sores. And here it says you do not. La kashya kan belach kan biyavesh. There's no difficulty. One is talking about moist sores. That's this braita that are not so bad. Dried out sores, however, are very bad, and so those you have to cry out and sound the alarm even on Shabbat. Tamar bi Yoshua ben Levi shechin shebiyakadosh baruch hu ala misrim lach b'mabachutz biyavesh mibifnim shnemar v'yishechin aba abuot porech ba'adam uba behema. We see that the dry ones are even worse, and that the fact that there are is a distinction between the dry and the moist ones, because here the Yoshua ben Levi says the boils that Hashem brought upon the Egyptians were moist on the outside and dry on the inside. As the Pasuk says that the boils were oozing on the people and on the animals. Oozing means they're oozing outside, but they were dry inside. What is this halakha that the papa's family said that a door that's locked won't open easily? We're talking about the institution of giving semicha, meaning passing on rabbinic ordination. There was, at that time, official rabbinic ordination that was given from teachers to student. And the Romans caught wind that this was a very important way of transmitting Torah, and so at some point they banned it. So sometimes they had to go sneak and they would try to give someone semicha. And the point is here, once the door is shut, and you're not able to give someone semicha, it's not going to open very quickly, right? You're not going to be able to have a second chance. Therefore, if you have some chance now to give semicha to someone, you better do it before the Romans come and crack down, and you won't be able to do it anymore. Rav Asher Amar, Kol HaMar'in HaMir'in Lo, Lo B'Mera Mitibin Lo. Anyone who has a bad experience, he will not soon have a good experience. Rav Acham Idifti Amar Le'olam En Mitibin Lo. Rav Acham Idifti says he will never have a good experience. This could be referring not just to giving someone ordination, but to hiring someone or giving him a promotion to be a Rosh Yeshiva. That if someone has a hard time to getting that position, then and it doesn't, let's say for some reason it doesn't work, it's not going to be a long time till they're appointed again. This would be like today, if someone, Lehavdil, if someone is appointed as a Supreme Court justice, they're proposed, and then it goes to the Senate, and they have a hard time, and they end up voting no. So you can be sure that that person, that candidate, is probably not going to be suggested again, because they didn't get the job the first time around. So it might be a very long time till they get it again. Rav Acha says they're never going to get it again. So that once a candidate is for whatever reason blocked, maybe because of persecution or maybe because of politics or whatever, then it's not likely that they will ever get the candidacy again. But we reject the stronger statement of Rav Acha that forever he won't get it, because in fact Rav Acha was talking about a personal issue that he himself once had. He himself was once appointed to be Rosh Yeshiva, and he was on his way there, but then at the last minute someone else came and rallied himself and swooped in and took the position, that Rav Acha never got the position again. So that's why he said, you know what, you'll never get it again. But in fact, it doesn't mean you'll never get it again, it's just that it will become more difficult. So now if someone buys a home in Eretz Yisrael, you can even go and make sure that the deal will go through by writing a deed of sale even on Shabbat. We question this. Really, you can violate Shabbat mid deoraita by writing on Shabbat as deoraita. I understand it's a great mitzvah, but even violate deoraita, it's not like a pikuach nefesh. Rava said in a different context that one asks a non-Jew to do it. Here too, one can ask a non-Jew to write the bill of sale, but you don't do it yourself. Generally, anything that you can't do, you can't ask a non-Jew to do either. But by asking a non-Jew, it becomes a lower level from a deoraita, it turns into a shevut, like the level of a derabanan. So therefore, it still wouldn't be allowed in a general circumstance just to ask a non-Jew to do something. But the mitzvah of settling the land of Israel is so great that the rabbi said, you know what, we're not going to apply our gezerah about asking a non-Jew to do something for such a great mitzvah. Amar Rabbi Shmuel ben Nachman, Amar Rabbi Yonatan, Halokeach Eir Beretz Yisrael Kofin Oto Likach La Derech Me'arbaru Chotem Mishum Yishu Beretz Yisrael. Another law that is good for the land, the settling land of Israel, is if someone buys a city in the land of Israel, the Bet Din, before they let the sale go through, they say you have to also purchase the roads from all four directions, and that way the city will be well connected, and that will increase the settlement of Israel, that people will be able to travel in this city and then go to the next city, and then that will continue to be settled. And so a nice series of laws for the sake of the settlement of Eretz Yisrael. Baruch Adonai Olam. Amen ve'amen.